back like you've never seen him before. More fantastic, more amazing, and even more incredible. He is
absolutely none of those things mentioned, so let's just get on with it and roll the music. Well, what an introduction that is. We are back, Women's Soccer Zone, after a couple of months break. It is good to be back, and I'm delighted once again to welcome my co-host for this episode from Our Game magazine, JJ Duke. JJ, been a while, mate. How you doing?
Refreshed and ready to go, Kieran. It's been exciting, chomping at the bit, but now finally, as the weather gets colder here in the US of A, it's only getting warmer and warmer in women's soccer.
Excellent. Good man. Good man. Well, we've got a lot to pile through, obviously, because we've not done a show for a little while. We're going to kick things off by talking about the Ballon d'Or shortlists, which were announced this week. There's plenty more that we need to go through. There was a surprise resignation in the German league. UEFA Women's Champions League winners Frankfurt will be searching for a new head coach. We're going to talk a little bit about the UEFA Women's Champions League quarterfinal draw, and talking about the Champions League, Brescia are one of those teams that have reached the quarters, and Paige Williams, formerly of Everton Ladies, recently joined the club, so I caught up with her. JJ's going to give us a bit of a rundown of what's going on in the US College Cup, because we are now down to the nitty-gritty with it being the semi-finals. And we're going to have a little look at what's going on in the W League, with Melbourne City certainly stamping their authority very early on. And we're going to finish up with a member of the Canadian Women's National Team who's currently playing down in Australia with Western Sydney Wanderers, none other than Carmelina Moscato. So, nowhere better to start than with the FIFA Ballon d'Or nominations, which will come after this.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSO Zone.
So, JJ, as mentioned in our intro, we kick off with the FIFA Ballon d'Or shortlist. 10 players, 10 coaches, whittled down to a final three. The players list is Carly Lloyd, Aya Miyama and Celia Sasic. And on the coaches list, it's Jill Ellis, Noria Sasaki and Mark Sampson. Let's talk about the players first off. Any surprises there for you? Any notable omissions? We both know and both agree Becky Sauerbrunn should be on that list of three. She didn't even make the list of 10, so we're not going to go down that road. But what do you make of the final three?
You know, like, to go off what you said, Kieran, there's always going to be somebody that's going to be on the outside looking in when you whittle down a list of 10 phenomenal players to three phenomenal players. You're always going to have a question, but I think in fairness, you look at the three players. Carly Lloyd, phenomenal this year. Granted, I just used that word a couple of times, but she's been excellent this entire year. Of course, scored the goal of the century, though we're not going to talk about her omission on the Puskas Award. That'll be for another time. Again, great season for Aya Miyama, class, as we all know. Granted, Japan, they had a great run of the tournament, a little bit of a sour taste in the final, but still, worldly player. And then Celia Sasic, I mean, what more can you say? She did it with country, did it with the club. Unfortunately, again, for her, the World Cup experience left with a little sour taste after missing the penalty against the U.S. and then falling to England in the third place match, but still, again, all three of these players well worthy of their nominations. And I'm looking forward to that day when they're all going to be congregating to see who wins.
Well, Celia Sasic, of course, won the UEFA Best Player in Europe a couple of months ago. Carly Lloyd, we've already mentioned, World Cup winner, scored that goal from the halfway line, sadly omitted from the Puskas list of nominations. I guess the question mark I have probably is over Aya Miyama, and I think it probably comes down to the fact that I just don't get to see enough Japanese football. We obviously saw her during the World Cup. You mentioned the word class. That is the best way to sum her up. She is a class act, very comfortable midfield player, and is a legend. She will go down as a Japan legend. But for me, I made it very public on Twitter. For me, I think Amandine Henry, very unlucky not to make that final three.
No, and you're full right to say that, and I think, again, she's a player now for folks that are on the U.S. side. Sometimes we don't see as much of, you know, players like Amandine Henry that we would like. Of course, you know, now with French football being a little bit more, not to say relevant, but at least we can watch a few more matches here and there on however people go about it. Brilliant this year. And I agree, you know, you have to have her class in there. Maybe some ways better than Aya Miyama, some ways Aya Miyama better than her. They play somewhat of the same position. Sometimes Aya a little more attacking, to where Amandine a little bit more of a holding player at times. But, you know, again, there's, as I said, there's always going to be somebody on the outside looking in, and it happened to be that this year it is as it was.
Yeah, you're right. I think Amandine Henry is certainly adding goals to her game. That's one thing that she has kind of developed, I think, over this year. We saw her score that screamer during the World Cup. She scored again in the last few days for France against Greece in the Euro 2017 qualifier. So for me, that's why I look at her as being unfortunate. I think she was one of the standout midfielders in the World Cup. She continues to be a real influence for that Lyon team that have reached the quarterfinals of the Champions League. So yeah, unfortunate, but you're right. There's always going to be someone that misses out. Unfortunately, this year, it was her on this occasion. But moving over to the coaches, as we mentioned, Norio Sasaki of Japan, Jill Ellis of the US, and Mark Sampson of England. Is this a nailed-on Jill Ellis award win, do we think?
It is, but everything is saying, at least to me right now, Mark Sampson. I mean, Jill Ellis, she came in, her, and she's now come out, you know, publicly and said, my goal when, or my duty when I took over the U.S. national team was to win the World Cup. There was nothing about, you know, trying to develop the players for the future. Her job was to win the World Cup. Now she's starting to bring in players during this victory tour and the preparations for the Olympics. But Mark Sampson, he found something within that England team. And this is coming from someone that is not a Brit, that doesn't have a whole lot of opportunities to watch the English women's national team play up until the World Cup, and he got something out of that team that has been waiting for it to happen. There have been some class players that have gone, you know, played with England and have never reached this pinnacle of success as a team that this team did this year. So you're right again in saying that this should be a lock for Jill Ellis, but there's just that little bit of a door that's saying, you know, maybe not so fast, that Mark Sampson might be a guy that, you know, if he doesn't win, he's going to be a very close second.
Did the judges take the easy option in just picking the coaches that finished 1, 2, and 3 at the World Cup?
I think so. You know, you look at some of the coaches that were on the list that didn't make it, and you have, let's see, more club coaches than anything. A couple of coaches at the international level, but I think still because of this being the World Cup year, that made it a little bit easy. But then again, you know, these are coaches that had to build for this tournament, you know, as opposed to, you know, you have like a Colin Bell who took Frankfurt, which is already almost a super club in their own right, and, you know, winning the Champions League in dramatic fashion. But still, I think this year, you're right, they did take the easy way.
Yeah, and that's not a criticism. The three coaches that they've picked are all great in their own way. I think we've already said it. I think Jill Ellis is nailed on to win it. I think Norio Sasaki is a worthy nomination. Absolutely no question whatsoever when you take a team to back-to-back finals in a World Cup. But I do want to talk about Mark Sampson, and obviously I am English, and I think eyebrows were raised when he got the England job, and I say that because there were some big names that were linked with that role. I know for a fact that Tony DiCicco was interested in that role. I think Paul Riley was interested in that role. John Herdman's name was being linked when he was flying high with the Canadian team. But Mark's really gone in there and he's stamped his own authority on it. He brought in players from the wilderness who hadn't been given an opportunity for a while under Hope Powell, the likes of Jodie Taylor, the likes of Leanne Sanderson. He's brought in young players and moulded them well, the likes of Demi Stokes and Fran Kirby. And he deserves huge amounts of credit for that. And I think, while I don't think he's going to win the award, I think just being nominated is a victory for him. And that's actually been recognised as well in the last few days, believe it or not, as well as him being nominated for the Ballon d'Or Coach of the Year. the England women's national team won quite a prestigious award in the last couple of days. They won the BT Sport Action Woman Award, beating some really high-profile women in various disciplines. Jessica Ennis-Hill, who is a British heptathlete, very, very popular amongst the English public. The Lionesses beat her to the award. Lizzie Armistead, who is a very successful cyclist over here, they beat her to the award. So to get that recognition, I think, can only be really good for English football. And Lucy Bronze, in addition, who was, of course, named to the World Cup team of the tournament, she's just been nominated as the first ever women's footballer for the BBC Sports Personality of the Year. And that award has been going for 60 years. It's been going since the mid-50s. I think five footballers have won that award in the entire history of it being run. So for Lucy to be nominated on a list that contains the likes of Mo Farah and Tyson Fury, who people will know, who just won the boxing world heavyweight title, beating Vladimir Klitschko, you know, Lewis Hamilton, there are huge, huge names in British sport that are on that list, and Lucy Bronze is amongst them. And hats off to Mark Sampson and his England team, because they have made massive strides this year, and I think it's a really, really encouraging time to be an England fan. But I think we'll finish off there on the Ballon d'Or list and my gloating of England, mate. But when we come back, we're going to have a little chat about the Champions League. But before that, a surprise resignation in the Frauen-Bundesliga.
Women's Soccer Zone would like to thank our partners, She Kicks Magazine. Subscribe at shekicks.net for even more women's football.
So welcome back. JJ, surprise announcement this week. Colin Bell of FFC Frankfurt parted company with the UEFA Women's Champions League winners, has decided to try his hand, new challenge, in the Toppserien in Norway, at Valdres. What did you make of that when you saw the news?
Yeah, it's always interesting when you see someone who's at the top, and in fairness, you know, that team, Frankfurt, is the top of the class of women's club football in Europe. And now all of a sudden going to you and I talked about this before the recording of the show, that not a unknown entity, you know, certainly a club that is solid in their own right, but not a team that's a tops in any stretch of the imagination in Europe. But I think also when you look at someone that makes a move like this, it's got to be a motivational thing, because you want to take on a new challenge, explore new opportunities, and, you know, make the most of it. And that's maybe sometimes where you learn a lot about yourself, whether if you're a player or if you're a coach or someone that works in a front office, and you, not to say drop down in, you know, club stature, but at the same time, you know, going, changing your location, changing how things are going, you learn about yourself, and you either become better or you realize, okay, wow, I really had what was going on, and why did I leave when I was on the top? But, you know, best of luck to him. I think it's going to be an interesting go about it.
Yeah, I won't deny it. I was very surprised. I have a good relationship with Colin, and I thought after winning the UEFA Women's Champions League that club would try and push on. But I think the reality is, when you look at some of the stuttering results that they've had in the league, they've already lost three league matches, and we're not even at Christmas yet. They lost players like Celia Sasic to retirement. Veronica Bouquet didn't come back and decided to join Bayern Munich. Jessica Fishlock didn't come back either. They managed to get her on loan last year. Yes, they've brought in the likes of Emily Van Egmond and Sophie Schmidt, but Sophie Schmidt has been out for 5 weeks with a rib injury. And I think for Emily Van Egmond, it's an adjustment for her. But I think speaking to him, she's really coming to her own now. But I think for me, I could go on about it and give my opinion, but I actually managed to have a quick word with Colin. And I started off by asking him why it was that he decided to go to Norway, and why in particular at Valdres.
You know, I've been thinking, basically for the last few months, you know, that I maybe would like to have a new challenge somewhere. And through the Champions League, the last year and a half, you know, this has really boosted my motivation to, you know, try out in a new country, you know, if possible and if I had the chance. And obviously I was concentrating on my job in Frankfurt, but that was in the back of my mind. And over the last few weeks, this has just, you know, got deeper and deeper, and then just thinking about, you know, when's the right time maybe just to especially after us winning the Champions League, to you know, maybe leave Frankfurt. And that came up now the last few days. We were able to qualify for the quarterfinals again of the Champions League. After three defeats in the league, we got back onto track, winning in Jena 5-4, with a great performance from the girls. And I just thought now is the time to make the change. And like I say, I've had the opportunity to go to Avaldsnes, a club that I've known about over the last few years, because a really, really good friend of mine, Roy Volt, had a spell as head coach. Roy is one of the regional coaches from the Norwegian FA and does a lot of work with the young boys and young girls for the Norwegian FA in their representative team. So I always knew about the club, and even two of my girls from Bad Neuenahr, Antonia Ullenberg and Marie Kuko, they also had a short spell with Avaldsnes after their spell at Bad Neuenahr. So, I'm just really looking forward to the opportunity. And again, one of the motivations was also that Avaldsnes is a new project, a young club, and they qualify for the Champions League for the first time in their history next season. So it makes it even more attractive.
Well, you mentioned Bad Neuenahr there, and people will know you for your previous job that you've just left at Frankfurt. But you've lived and played in Germany for over 30 years, Colin. How difficult is it going to be, number one, to leave the country, and number two, to adjust to a new one?
Well, I'm not sure. That's why I'm really, I'm just jumping in cold water, I'd say, and just to see what it's like and to make sure I can swim straight away. And it's just a challenge that I probably needed, at this stage of my career. And, I'd love just to have the opportunity to do something totally different, to try to get to grips as soon as I can with a new language. I know that they can all speak very good English in Norway. So obviously I have no language problem on that area, but I want to try to get to grips with the language as well. So I'll be learning the next few weeks until I eventually get over there. So again, it's just like a big adventure, and I just have this attitude: if it works out, great; if not, then I'll just come back. But so I don't know how difficult it will be until I actually do it. But it's just a great challenge. I've just been thinking as well, last few weeks, the last few days, and now, especially with it being official, it's just a stage of my career where I think, if I don't do it now, when am I going to actually do it? So I still feel, young and fit, but I just need a new challenge. So, I'm just up for it.
Okay, so that was Colin Bell giving us some insight into his new challenge. And JJ, we move swiftly on to the UEFA Women's Champions League quarterfinals. Now, I was fortunate enough to see Chelsea against Wolfsburg in their first leg tie in the last 16. And Chelsea gave a really good account of themselves. But when you got the experience of Wolfsburg and the quality that they've got, it was always going to be a big challenge. And now they face Brescia of Italy. Are we expecting a heavy Wolfsburg win for that one?
First match will be at Brescia. I think they're going to try and hold their own. It's a quarterfinals now, so you have to, you deserve to be there. They're definitely going to put up a good fight at home, but we've seen this throughout, at least in this competition, that first leg matches don't really have a whole lot of impact on how it's going to go. It's all about how you finish the tie. Playing the second match in Wolfsburg, I think that it's going to be tough. If Brescia can not concede at home, that is going to make their lives a whole lot simpler, because then you just have to look at one 90-minute match. Now, granted, we still have, these are going to be games played at the end of March. We have, 3+ months for teams to, especially now Brescia, you can go out and perhaps say, hey, by the way, we're going to be playing a big Champions League match. Go into the transfer market and see what you can draw up in that time, and they might have it.
Absolutely, and actually, before we cover off the other three quarterfinals, I got a good insight from a member of the Brescia team as to how they might prepare for that quarterfinal, because I spoke to Paige Williams, who up until recently was a defender with Everton Ladies. She's grown up with the club, come through the system. Obviously, they're playing in the FA Women's Super League 2, weren't able to bounce back after relegation last year. And Paige has been given quite a unique opportunity to go and play out in Italy, to play in Serie A, and to go and play in the quarterfinals of the UEFA Women's Champions League. So I managed to have a quick catch-up with her. So here she is talking about her move to Brescia. So I will start off, Paige. Buonasera.
Buonasera.
How are you enjoying? How are you settling into your new life in Italy? For those that don't know, you have signed for UEFA Women's Champions League quarterfinalist Brescia. How are you settling into life in Italy? And tell people how the move came about.
You know what, it's been the perfect start. I couldn't have asked for anything more. The team have been really welcoming. I'm living with three other girls, and two of them are fluent in English, so they're giving me a few Italian lessons, which is handy because I'll be needing that. The move came about when Brescia came to Liverpool to play them, Liverpool in the Champions League, and their coach got speaking about, you know, they needed a defender and they wanted to strengthen in that area. And then my name cropped up. So they sort of got in touch by email and we exchanged a few emails, and then they invited me over for a trial. So I thought, yeah, I'll take the trial offer. You know, I've got nothing to lose. So I went over for a trial and I absolutely loved it. It was perfect for the timings with, you know, being on a break, and I don't feel like I got a good run in the WSL 2, so I still feel pretty fresh. So after the trial week, we exchanged a few more emails, and then they emailed the contract out to me. Everything was perfect. I liked where I was living. You know, like I said, I loved the team. So it was all perfect for me. And then I drove over here because I really needed my car with me, just to be a bit more independent here. And yeah, I arrived Sunday and I've trained this week and I absolutely love it.
How much thought did you have to give it? Because it's quite a brave move for a young player, especially a young English player. We're not renowned for being great with adjusting to new cultures and languages and things like that. So for a young player like yourself, how much thought did you have to give it before you committed to the contract that was being offered?
Yeah, after the trial week, because I was not hoping that I didn't enjoy it, but I knew it was going to be hard to leave. So after the trial week, I sort of sat down with my mum and dad, because, you know, they're quite protective and they would have liked me to stay in England, but they know that this is best for me now. So, you know, I went through the pros and cons, and the pros just outweighed the cons for me. And yeah, I think it took about 2 days to be certain. And then, yeah, I got it all sorted and come out here. It hasn't been easy with the language barrier, because the coach doesn't speak any English. I think she knows. I think she can just about say my name. So, you know, the girls are always trying to translate, and they've been brilliant. So I think I really need to learn the language quick.
And how difficult a decision was it? I mean, you've been at Everton Ladies for a long time through your youth. How big a decision, how difficult is it to leave a club that you've grown up with?
You know what, Everton Ladies have pretty much made me the player I am, you know, with Mo and Andy and Nicola taking on this year. They've really taught me the basics, and at Everton they teach you how to be a good person. You know, they've given me the confidence to be able to move away to a different country, you know. And, you know, it's just been, it was the hardest decision I've had to make. You know, I've never really dealt with moving clubs or, you know, making big decisions like this, except for youth football, which doesn't really count. So it was extremely hard, and I hope it's the right decision. It feels like the right decision, but I will miss Everton a lot, and I'll still look out for the scores next year, and I wish the club well.
So what are you most looking forward to about the new challenge with Brescia? You're obviously going to be playing in the top division in Italy. You've got a quarter-final of the UEFA Women's Champions League to look forward to, an easy one against Wolfsburg. How much are you looking forward to those challenges?
Yeah, you know what? I've come here to win. You know, I want to win every competition we play in. The Wolfsburg, we sat and we watched the draw, and I was fingers crossed that we didn't come across the German or the French teams, you know, and we were the first name out. So, you know, you've just got to deal with what's in front of you. I'm sure we'll do a lot of work on trying to stop them playing and trying to play our own game if we can. So, yeah, I think we've got a lot of work to do.
Ramona Backerman, Carolina Hansen, Alexandra Popp, some of their attacking players. How are you going to deal with that attacking threat when they come up against you?
You know what, I think we just need to tighten up at the back and make sure everything's pinpoint. For me personally, this is perfect because it gives me a chance to put myself on a marker as where I'm at. You know, these are some of the best players in the world. And if I'm going to be able to defend against them, then I'm going to have to make sure it's world-class defending. And, you know, and that's where I want to be. I want to be competing with the best.
And I guess one question I'd have is, what was the appeal of Italy? I know you said that it was as a result of Brescia getting in contact with you when they came over and played against Liverpool. You mentioned off recording that you'd had ambitions to play abroad, but you always thought it was going to be France. What was it that really tipped it in the favour of Italy when you decided to make the move?
You know, I think it's the passion they show in the games. They want to win so bad. You know, they might, I said before in an interview a few days ago that, you know, they might not be the most physical team I've ever played with or against, but the will to win, and, you know, technically they're very good. And I'm playing, the girl who plays centre-half, Sara Gamo, she plays in the Champions League final with PSG last year, so she's got a lot of experience, and playing alongside her, I hope I can learn a lot from her.
And I have to ask a question about, I know we've talked about how difficult it was to leave Everton Ladies, but you've, as I said, you've been there for a long time, been there since a young age, you're still very young now, but how hard has it been seeing the club having to play in the second tier of English football, a club that has so much history, a club that had been so successful in the past, relegation last year, trying to bounce back at the first attempt and it not happening? How difficult was it to be a part of that environment?
You know what, it's sad because, you know, I was in the system and I was around the first team, you know, when the likes of Jill Scott, Tony, Farah, I like come through the ranks with watching them play at Everton. So when I got there and then everyone decided to move, I think it comes down to the only thing, money. You know, we didn't get as much backing off the men's team as we'd have liked. And, you know, the way the game was moving, everyone wanted full-time training. And that we needed full-time training. And I think Everton couldn't meet the demands of that. So it was sad to see so many players go, but understandable. Because, like I said, it's the full-time training, being a professional player, which, it's about time that's happened in the women's game. It's just, it's so sad that the Everton men don't give us the backing that we need. And I hope in the next 2 years, you know, we didn't do ourselves any justice with that case by not being promoted straight away. But I think that's where the club's got to go with the team. And hopefully they can invest a bit more into the women's team.
We mentioned full-time training, and my final question will relate to that. You've got that professional environment at Brescia. You will have the chance to train every day, as well as winning every competition that you compete in, as you've already said. What's the biggest aim that you have to play at Brescia? What do you hope to get out of the experience of playing in Italy?
You know what, the past, I think, 2 or 3 years, you know, doing my ACL, it's been a period of getting back into the game, you know, getting used to things. And now I feel like I'm back into it, and now I want to make the step up. And, you know, the seniors is certainly in my aim, England seniors, and I think I just need to carry on getting better every single day. And cementing my place at left-back or centre-half, wherever that'll be. You know, anywhere along the back four, I'm happy to play, and I just want to perfect that role.
Brilliant. Well, we wish you the very best, Paige. We'll certainly be keeping tabs on how you're getting on, especially when that bumper Champions League quarter-final comes up against Wolfsburg in March. So a little bit of a wait, but we wish you well, and keep in touch and let us know how you're getting on. And I guess the only thing left to say is ciao. So that was Paige Williams giving us a great insight. Really do wish her well, because she's a young prospect in this country who may well be turning out for the England seniors in the not too distant future. JJ, that was the first quarterfinal discussed between Wolfsburg and Brescia. Frankfurt against Rosengard will play the winner of Wolfsburg and Brescia. So potentially we could have an all-German semi-final, but Rosengard will certainly have something to say about that, especially with the signing of Elemeyer, who has joined from the Houston Dash. And we're also expecting Aaron McLeod to join Rosengard. So both of them should be in place by the quarterfinals, and that will make for an interesting tie.
Yeah, that will. That's the glory tie of this quarterfinal round, no doubt about it. And, you know, Rosengard is a team that is definitely up for the challenge of this match. You know, they're going to have to hold their own again at home, but, you know, you look at the roster, the team that they have first, Marta, That's, you know, whenever you play a team that has Mart on it, they're always going to be tough to beat in Champions League. Then you have, you know, the likes of Ali Riley, who's going to be there, and then the additions that you stated of Alan Masser and potentially Aaron McLeod as well. So, you know, definitely that's going to be one to keep an eye on. Curious to see if it's going to be an attacking two-legged affair, or if it's going to be one, and I hate to admit it, but I have a feeling that at least over the first 90, we're going to see some very cagey stanzas of minutes throughout that match, because, you know, for Frankfurt, they're not going to want to concede at home. Rosengard, they're not going to want to, or excuse me, Frankfurt's not want to get behind on the road, and Rosengard's not going to want to concede at home, especially knowing that they're going to have to play the second match at Frankfurt, tough place to play. But yeah, if it all works out, it could be that dream quarterfinal.
Yeah, and Frankfurt, obviously, by then will have a new coach in place replacing Colin Bell, who we obviously spoke to earlier on the show. Third quarterfinal, Lyon against Sparta Prague of Czech Republic. This one, I think, probably is the most simple of the lot to call. I think Lyon will win this one comfortably.
Yeah, I agree. You know, congratulations, of course, to Praha for getting through to this, you know, big boost to their program. But Lyon, they're just too good at this point. If they don't get to the final, it's almost kind of bad on them.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you look at the form of some of their players, Eugenie Le Sommer was on the Ballon d'Or long list, didn't quite make the final three. Ada Hegerberg is having the season of her life, has just signed a new contract as well, as has Elodie Thomisen. You've got that midfield, which we talk about over and over and over. Camille Abeli, Louisa Nisiba, and Amadine Henry. For me, best midfield three in the world. Don't think many teams touch them. So yeah, I expect a comfortable Lyon win, but as you say, massive respect to Sparta Praha, and I just hope it's not too one-sided, because on the occasion we do see one-sided quarter-final matches, I hope this isn't one of them. Final quarter-final match, FC Barcelona against PSG. Now, on paper, two massive clubs in the men's game, but in terms of the women's game, I'm expecting not a comfortable victory, but I am expecting PSG to go through.
And if PSG does not win this match, or this two-legged tie, that could be huge problems for that program, because Barcelona is a team, quietly, they're starting to rise up a little bit, because, you know, the women's game in Spain is, you know, again, slowly starting to gain some traction there. Barcelona is the team, and has been the team for some while now, that's been the class of that league, and if they're able to win that tie, I think that goes a long way into how, you know, the Spanish women's football is looked. Because, again, you know, you talk about a Champions League semifinal. It doesn't matter what it is. It's a Champions League semifinal. And if Barcelona gets there, you know that they're going to get a bit more support going behind it, because they're going to have to face Lyon, which is going to be no easy task in their own right.
Absolutely, and PSG probably need to look at the Women's Champions League much like they did last year as their possible avenue for a trophy, because they are already significantly behind Lyon in the French First Division, so maybe the Champions League could be their opportunity for some silverware. Well, that is the Champions League and, of course, our interview with Paige Williams. And when we come back, it's JJ's bread and butter, because we're going to have a look at the upcoming semi-finals of the US College Cup.
Women's Soccer Zone. It's all about the players.
So welcome back. JJ, I'm going to hand this one over to you, mate, because we don't get a lot of access to the US college system over here, but we are at the semi-final stage. So fill us in on what's been going on.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, the NCAA tournament is the concluding tournament of the college scene here, at this being the Division I level. Started with 64 teams all the way back in early November, combining all the winners of each of the, 30-some-odd collegiate conferences there are, and sprinkled in the best at-large teams to not win their conference. And we've gotten down to the Final Four. It's going to be played in Cary, North Carolina, which, you know, beautiful soccer-specific stadium that they have there. They've been playing the tournament there for quite some time now. It's going to feature one semifinal between Penn State and Rutgers, which is in the State University of New Jersey. For Penn State, last gotten to this stage back in 2012 and got to the final, a team led by Christine Nairn, among others. Should be an interesting game. Rutgers has never gotten to this point before in their program's history. Already defeated what a lot of people thought the team that might beat Florida State in the championship match defeated Virginia at Virginia.
I saw that. Yeah. I saw people were going quite crazy over that. I could tell that that was quite a big upset because Virginia, historically, a strong college side.
Very big team down there. Of course, last year, led by the likes of Morgan Bryan and Daniel Colaprico, lost 1-0 to Florida State in the championship, and they're destined to go right back to where they were and get to that championship match. But Rutgers winning in dramatic penalty kick fashion. So those two teams play in the same conference called the Big Ten. And the other side, you have a battle of two ACC teams, Florida State and Duke University down in North Carolina. So it's going to be a bit of home cooking for them in that match. But Florida State has been on an absolute tear in this tournament. In four matches, outscored their opponents 15-0. On the other side, Duke has had to do it the hard way. They've won three consecutive matches on the road, defeating Florida in the third round of the tournament and upset Stanford out in California in penalties to move on. So, you know, all to play for. The semifinal matches are on Friday, this coming Friday, and the championship match is on Sunday. You know, at least we could say this thing, it's going to be an ACC team versus a Big Ten team. And you could also check out our game, mag.com. There will be a full preview, as we have done throughout the entire tournament, on what to look out for. And we also have some predictions, no holds barred. And one person does have Rutgers winning, can tell you that.
Do you have Duke, seeing as they're named after you?
No. With the greatest utmost respect to that program, as someone that is born in the state of Connecticut, long-time basketball rivalry between the University of Connecticut and Duke University will always stand by my Huskies of Connecticut. So, no, I have Florida State rolling.
I just thought you're a celebrity, mate. They named a university after you, but there you go. There you go.
Not at all.
Well, exciting times in the US College Cup, and we'll certainly keep tabs, and we'll definitely get an update from you on how those semifinals go. But in addition to that, this week the semifinalists of the Herman Trophy were announced as well, which recognises the standout players from the college system. Some interesting names on that list, mate, many of which will know the likes of Kadisha Buchanan, who of course won the Young Player of the Tournament at the FIFA Women's World Cup, Ashley Lawrence, another Canadian international who played at the World Cup, Emily Sonnet, who of course made her US Women's National Team debut in the recent games in the Victory Tour, and then for me, a couple of interesting ones, Leah Galton and Rachel Daly, who are incidentally both from the same town over here in England, from Harrogate near Leeds. Those two have also made the semi-final list, so congratulations to those two in particular from me. But a strong list, JJ. Where's your money going?
Yeah, so what they're going to do is over the next week plus, they're going to cut this list down to the final three. And then in Missouri, they're going to announce the winner, and the winner will be announced on Friday, January 8th. And then, you know, we'll be most likely flown right over to Baltimore for the NSCAA convention. So definitely something to keep an eye out for.
Which we're going to.
Sorry, yes, that's where we're going
to
be.
Yeah, my first NSCAA convention. I'm very much looking forward to that. But sorry for interrupting, carry on.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, there's a lot of quality on this list. And also a thing that for some be surprised, this is not just a senior award. This is open to, you know, any player from any class, a freshman, a sophomore, a junior, or a senior could win. And, you know, this list does have a lot of upperclassmen, but it's not all just seniors, which means one thing. We're going to see these players for at least another year, including one, Megan Connolly, a freshman that plays at Florida State in the Irish youth system, just a freshman, and she's been class this year. My three, Emily Sonnet probably is going to be in there. Kadisha Buchanan, I think, in fairness, might get into that final three as well. And then, you know, the last spot is really up for grabs. You don't often have defenders winning this trophy, but those two have been probably the best in college. But then, you know, do you go with the high score, perhaps a Janine Becky, who, you know, just missed out in the Canadian World Cup team? You have players like Savannah Jordan from Florida, 20-goal scorer this year. You have the players, like you mentioned, Leah Galton, Rachel Daly, both class forwards. So yeah, it really could go down, you know, to who has it on the day. But definitely a great list and a great representation of collegiate soccer here in the U.S.
Brilliant. You heard it here from our college expert. Great way to wrap up this segment of the show. Final one coming up after this short break, where we will cover off the W League down in Australia.
Women's Soccer Zone. Listen to the show on Audioboom or download via iTunes. Just search for Women's Soccer Zone.
So welcome back. Last segment of the show, guys. Thank you for sticking with us. JJ, the W League down in Australia now. There was a lot of hype surrounding Melbourne City FC when the club was formed. Of course, a sister club of Manchester City Women Football Club. Made some high-profile signings, the likes of Kim Little, Jess Fishlock, Lisa Devanna, Steph Catley. And they are 6 wins out of 6 and looking very comfortable, aren't they?
No, this is a team that is absolutely loaded on talent. You know, in such a short season as it is, you play, you know, not a handful of matches, but it goes quick. But similarly to how the U.S. system works, you take the top 4 teams and you play off. So it is just one thing to get into the playoffs, and then to get to the grand final, which is the W League's championship match. Of course, Canberra, the holders, right now sitting in second. Newcastle Jets, a team that's on the rise this year, added a couple of players from overseas, and they've been a nice little bit of a surprise to be in third position at the moment. Still plenty of ways to go in the season. And then you look at the other side, and unfortunately, with one team rising, you have to see another team fall. Unfortunately, also happens to be in the same city as Melbourne Victory, always a team that's towards the top of the table every season. They're, you know, right now they're dead last. Dead bottom in the table, conceded 13 to just scoring 6. They have some good players on that team, but when you're second fiddle in your own city, things often get hard.
Yeah, and it's very difficult for them because they did lose players. The likes of Jess Fishlock have played for Melbourne Victory. Steph Catley was captain at Melbourne Victory and moved over to Melbourne City. So very difficult for them, but it is, you're right. And you look at the table, Perth Glory were the league winners last year, but unfortunately, much like Seattle Reign, they didn't go on to win the grand final. Of course, Canberra United beat them in the final. Brisbane Roar, stacked with Matilda players, the likes of Tamika Butt and Katrina Gorey, they find themselves second bottom. And you're absolutely right. There are teams there that haven't necessarily been standouts in the past who are really making a name for themselves. And one of the teams that really struggled last year was Western Sydney Wanderers, who have Keelan Winters from the Seattle Reign. But another player that they added before the season started was Carmelina Moscato. We know her from her time in the NWSL, over 90 caps for the Canadian Women's National Team. And I met Carm when I was out in Seattle last year, and I got on really well with her. And I've not had her on the show before, and I thought the move down to Australia was a good excuse to see how she was getting on after a difficult time with injury. So I managed to catch up with her, talk about Australia, and also when she and her Canadian Women's National Team teammates are going to do the follow-up to the infamous duck sauce video from 4 years ago. So here she is. Right, so for the latest edition of Women's Soccer Zone, I'm delighted to be joined by Canadian international and current Western Sydney Wanderers defender, Carmelina Moscato. Carm, I guess the first thing for me to say is, g'day, mate.
G'day, mate. Stray, mate.
How how's life down in Australia? We haven't seen each other since we met in Seattle in May last year. So tell me what's been going on and how you ended up in Australia.
Yes, first of all, we should change that. You and I should definitely meet up at some point pretty soon here. But, you know, Australia, it has been a real treat. Came here middle of October and have settled in quite nicely. You know, I think I landed on a Wednesday and was in my first match on a Saturday. So that was a bit of a whirlwind, but, you know, jet lag aside and getting my feet back and my fitness up, you know, I feel like we're in round 7 over here and things have been quite nice and progressing pretty well. Australia as a country is unbelievable. You know, we get, I'm a little bit outside the heart of Sydney. And it's pretty much a dream to be able to explore a place like this. You know, I'm an hour from numerous beaches. So things like that are pretty cool. And put some hard work in throughout the week as well. Makes for a good time.
So how did the move come about? Because you were coming off of a 2014 where you were at Seattle Reign, where it was massively disrupted by injury. You were in the Canada Women's National Team squad for the World Cup, but didn't get probably as many minutes as you would like. How did the move to Western Sydney end up coming about?
Yeah, I think you just kind of nailed it. You know, I really wanted to be in a place where I hoped to get some true minutes and in a way, you know, I don't know if this is the right way to say it, but reward myself for all the work and coming back from injury, you know. Everybody on that roster, on that 23-player roster, wanted to play more minutes in that World Cup. And, you know, I think all those people on the bench, and I think it was about me getting out there and playing soccer and attempting to fall in love with the game again. And it's essentially doing that, you know. I have a smile on my face and, you know, I'm 31 now, probably at kind of the tail end of what I'm doing here. And it's a great way to get out there and just and celebrate the sport in a way.
So when you were approached by Western Sydney, you obviously have a decision to make. It's a long way from home. Keelan Winters was your one of your teammates. Keelan Winters was your captain at Seattle Reign. Did you speak to her before you made the decision?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, it was definitely a joint thing in the sense of the team was looking for a center back, and she kind of I told her I was looking to come over, and it kind of it worked out that way. I emailed the coach right away and got an answer. So yeah, definitely Keelan was a big part of that, and she's somebody here that, you know, provides a huge comfort not only on the field for how great of a player she is and what a phenomenal leader she is, but just on top of that, you know, her and I and then her wife Paige, you know, we spend a lot of time together and dead from home being so far away.
Well, it's kind of like a, it's almost like a playground for players from the NWSL, the W League. We've already mentioned Keelan, yourself. Kendall Johnson is there with you, who obviously represents Portland Thorns. Sarah Killian is over there. Vanessa DiBernardo is down there. Kim Little and Jess Fishlock are there. Christine Nairn. What's the attraction of the W League, and what differences have you noticed between the W League and the NWSL?
Yeah, I just think it's, you know, one of the only leagues, first and foremost, that, you know, is operating during this time. It's a perfect off-season transition for those particular players in the NWSL. And I think the competition is high. You know, the Matildas as a nation and as a squad are stronger and stronger every year, and they highlight this league. So, you know, like I mentioned earlier, you know, there's a competitiveness and a fitness level and an athleticism to this league that mirrors the NWSL quite well, and then you have a lot of youth players. I think that's the difference here. It's kind of a mix of, the Matildas in a higher level profile player, and then you also have the developmental players. There's a ton of teenagers in the league, up and coming Matildas, and otherwise. So it's a mix. It's a variety, and I think it does the job to get people fit for the NWSL preseason period. So it's perfect in a way, and I can see why what the appeal is. And here in Australia, there's really not much to complain about there with the sun and enjoying a summer and evading most likely a winter at home.
Absolutely. One of the only places in the world where all the rest of us are suffering with the chill and the frost, you get the sunshine and the barbecues on the beach on Christmas Day. So there you go. You're certainly winning in that department. But I know you will have spoken to Keelan, I'm sure, about she was obviously at Western Sydney Wanderers last year. They didn't have the best of campaigns last year. I think if I remember rightly, they got hit for 9 or 10 in one game in particular. But not too bad of a start this time round. Sixth in the league. You've got this coming weekend, you've got the derby against Sydney FC. What's been your early impressions of the team? How have you settled in? And have you three, Kendall and Keelan, kind of got your own little corner for the North Americans where you're kind of taking the mickey out of everyone else?
Well, that's always going to happen, you know, with me, for sure. We always find a way to have some fun. But, we're finding the league quite well in this year, starting off with the Wanderers. You know, we have already two wins under our belt, which is a good start, good solid points. And to be frank, there's about probably only the Canberra game that really escaped us. But the rest of the games, we were right in it. Even that Brisbane game, we ended up losing 3-0 against Haley Kottmeyer, you know, and the rest of those girls. And, you know, those three goals came after the 75th minute. So something like that. We've been competitive. I think it's about getting points where we can now. You know, it's a very short league. So if you don't get points, you know, you miss a couple here and there that you're supposed to get. I mean, it kind of escapes you. So, but yeah, like you said, last year, I think it's already a huge improvement to where the squad was and team morale and the cohesiveness. And it's a step forward for the Wanderers. And I think, you know, I'm just pleased to be a small part of that, and Keelan, of course, is a huge part of that. So it's coming along quite nicely, and you know, Kendall is recovering from some head trauma from the first game in Adelaide, and she'll be back on the field hopefully quite soon. We can get our three pack together again.
Your tripod.
Yeah, tripod. Yeah, I wasn't sure we'd go with that one, but yeah, our tripod.
Well, you've mentioned kind of settling in, and you've mentioned some games there, but you haven't mentioned the game against the Newcastle Jets, where you popped up in injury time and scored the winner. Talk me through that one. That must have felt good.
Definitely. I mean, listen, I haven't scored a goal in a long time, and you know, since my striker days in college, you know, and even then, but. It was a great feeling. At the end of the day, we were really pressing for that game. We knew that we needed some points out of that, and it was an emotional second half, really. We were doing anything and everything to win. It was quite, you know, not the best-looking game to watch, but I think we did what we needed to do. We had a last-minute corner kick that we earned and made a run for it. So, yeah, lucky that the ball fell where it did, and... Honestly, you know, now it's given me a bit of inspiration, to be honest. Like, I don't score, so for me, I'm like, I can do this again. It's quite fun.
Well, the stint down in the W League, as we mentioned earlier, has come off the back of probably a difficult 18 months for you. As we mentioned, Seattle didn't really get the game time because of injury. You had the World Cup this year. Now, I'm not going to go into the sort of too much controversial stuff, but there was, during the tournament... There was some news that came out that essentially cited you as being a source for communicating that there was perhaps disharmony in the squad. Now, I'm not going to ask you whether that was all true, because I'm sure it's all been said. And for me, I don't really know why it was felt that the individual concerned felt it was an appropriate time to communicate that. But how difficult was that for you? Being in that environment and being in that squad, when that's being communicated out publicly and your name is being attached to it?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I think, you know, we knew going into that tournament that all eyes were going to be on us as a host nation, you know, especially coming off of the bronze medal. Could they, you know, the questions were, you know, were they going to do it again? And people were asking some pretty tough questions there. So, you know, I think it was more of... the lucky part for me was that nobody actually believed that I said that. And that for me went a long way. Not only my teammates, my coach, the media, lots of people in the media backed me. But I think at the end of the day, it was just a bad situation where I entertained a conversation that probably shouldn't have been entertained off the record with what I thought was an old friend. You know, and just not even being part of any such discussions really during a tournament of that sensitivity. So, yeah, to the motives of the particular person, Christine, I don't know. And you can never really get to the bottom of that. But as far as I know, as far as it goes, it was just something that didn't need to happen. And, yeah, added stress to, you know, as I was coming off the bench for the tournament, needed to be ready in a good mental space. And it was just an added thing that didn't need to really be, you know, it was unnecessary, really, like you said. So, yeah, we all got past it pretty quickly. In fact, it brought the team together. I think it was just a matter of, look, this is what's out there, this is what's going on, and this is what people are willing to do to perhaps cause that disharmony that wasn't there.
Okay.
So, you know, really, that's that.
Yeah, and, I mean, we're at the end of 2015 now. When you look back at that World Cup, what's your kind of overriding feelings? Do you look back on it, not do you look back on it fondly, but how fondly do you look back at it? And what are kind of the key things that you took from it and what the players took from it as a whole?
Yeah, I think it was expectations are everything. You know, we wanted to be on that podium again. I mean, I'm not afraid to say that. We wanted to be in that final match against the U.S. at home in Vancouver. We had dreamt of that every single day. You know, so anything short of that would have been devastating, anything. So, you know, at the end of the day, from an internal standpoint, and if we're going to talk about goals and expectations, yeah, we took it pretty hard. But at the end of the day, I think the staff prepared the team. The girls were incredible in terms of commitment for what we gave. And it was about going back and taking a minute to be like, all right, it wasn't, you know, our best wasn't good enough in this particular moment. And I think, you know, everybody's prepared to do whatever it takes to move forward to Rio and to feel that and to be on that podium again. So it's a very move forward culture that John has created with the squad. you know, it's kind of onward and upward in a way. And as devastating as it was, he gave everybody that period post-tournament to deal and to process, you know, individually and collectively. And now everyone's back to the drawing board. There's a camp going on currently in Vancouver, and I know they're working hard. And big tournament for them coming up in Brazil. And, of course, qualifiers in February. So it's back to task, really. You don't have time to dwell with these kinds of things.
Well, those qualifiers, obviously, for the Rio Olympics taking place in the United States in February. Your last game for the national team, or the national team's last game, was against England in that quarterfinal. How frustrating has it been for you and the players that you've not really had an opportunity to build on that momentum and that interest that you developed during the tournament? England themselves had their first game at home since they won the bronze medal this past weekend. 13,000 people turned up in a stadium when it was horrendous conditions, very windy, very rainy, really good crowd for a homecoming game. You guys haven't had the opportunity to do that. How frustrating is it that you've not been able to build on that momentum and that interest?
Well, I'm going to, you know, that's an interesting way to pose it. I think, in fact, you know, hosting and being in front of our, you know, 54,000 people for however many games it was, five matches in the World Cup, like that was, you know, I think our home crowd, you know, knows us. We've been able to be in front of them. This period is about a sense of rebuilding, obviously retreating in a way. I know the focus has shifted. There's been a couple of home men's matches for their qualifying campaign. So it's an interesting time for Canada soccer. I know next year it'll be right back in the forefront, but I think after all the effort that went into, you know, playing on Canadian soil, it was a second to take a breath and I think get back to task and really the training grounds. So I think that's what the team needed. And I'm speaking, and that's a pretty broad stroke. Obviously, John would be able to comment better, but I do think that it's a good time for the team to not be in the spotlight and to really show up with a bang in 2016.
You mentioned that John's kind of created this forward-thinking culture and mentality. Now you've stated there that there is a squad that's currently training in Vancouver. You're not involved at the moment, but I'm sure that you're in no way of the view that your international career is done. You've got 90 odd caps. Is the ambition to reach the magic 100, Khan?
Yeah, of course. I think that's a pinnacle for most players internationally, and you know, I'm seven games away, and whether that's in the cards to complete that is kind of up in the air at the moment. You know, there's definitely a new direction in the squad, and being a little bit of an older player, a veteran player, you know, I think there may not be an opportunity for me there, but at the end of the day, that's not going to stop me from being ready to play for Canada. It's really at the end of the day for Canada, and I'm on a wider selected roster at the moment. And to be honest, if there's a job to do and I'm called upon that, I know I'll be ready. So that's kind of the current status. And you know, that said, without really any emotion, because there's no reason to be emotional just yet about that. I'm in full support of the squad and what it needs. And I think all the veterans and all the players who aren't selected for that next step will feel similarly. We just want what's best for the country, to be honest.
Well, I've got two more. My next question is the W League obviously finishes at the beginning of the year. You then have a decision to make as to what you want to do regarding your club future. Any chance we might see you over here in England, or do you see your future back in the States in the NWSL?
Yeah, that's also another thing. I think, man, I hope something works out in the NWSL. England would be a dream. I'm open at the moment, to be honest. My life could go a couple different directions. You've caught me at a cool time. You know, not a scary time, not an intimidating time, a pretty cool one, because I do know that any direction I go towards, I'm going to make it the best it can be. So I'm not sure. I'm going to be honest and say I'm not sure what happens after this, which has also caused me to be pretty, you know, in the moment, of course, here. I'm trying to enjoy every day, every time I get to touch the ball, because I don't really know, you know, what's next. So we will see.
And the final one, we know you're a character. When are we going to see the follow-up to the duck sauce video that you and your Canada teammates put together a few years ago? Because we've been waiting patiently and it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, you know who's actually behind that? The mastermind behind all those videos is, in fact, Stephanie Labbé. She is an incredible instigator of such moments, of shenanigans. And I wouldn't be surprised if it happened in the spring once we're all back together.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Calm, it's been a genuine pleasure. Glad things are working out for you down at Western Sydney Wanderers. Hopefully you can sort out a club in the NWSL, but preferably come over here to England. But keep us posted and let us know how you're getting on.
No, thank you so much, and thanks for having me on your show. I always love listening to your podcast, and you're pretty awesome guy. So thanks. Hopefully we meet up soon.
Women's Soccer Zone. It's all about the players.
So that was Carmelina Moscato, and I think that is a lovely way to bring this latest show to an end. JJ, it's been a whirlwind, mate. It's been 2 months away, but it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for joining me, mate.
Absolutely. Looking forward to the next.
And thank you very much for you listeners for tuning in. Sorry it's been so long since we did a show, but I can assure you the enthusiasm is very much back, and JJ and I will be back in a couple of weeks, a couple of interviews already lined up. Of course, if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do. We're on @WosoZone. Any feedback, bad or good, drop it our way on email on wosozone@gmail.com. In a couple of weeks' time, we will speak to you then. Bye-bye.